Zombie takeout time. I'm out.
Zombie takeout. Roger that.
Welcome to episode 135 of Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we have a little bit of listener submitted. This is from Tom Gerke on Google Plus in reference to last week's episode. He said, I finally caught up. Nothing to add. Enjoyed this episode almost as much as I enjoyed the movie itself, which was quite a bit. Thank you, Tom. And on to some news. First story from Cinema Blunt. Baywatch movie to be directed by Reno 911 co-creator. A movie based on the long-running series Baywatch has been in development for years now. The most recent update coming last September when Rescue Me co-creator Peter Tolan said that he had completed a draft of a screenplay that he had turned into Paramount Pictures for development. Now, over a year later, it looks as though the studio is finally ready to actually do something with it. Vulture has learned from insiders close to the project that Robert Ben-Gurant has been hired to direct the comedy adaptation of Baywatch. Gurant is best known as one of the creators of Comedy Central's series Reno 911, of course.
Huge fan, yeah.
But also has plenty of directing experience, having helmed Reno 911 Miami, the 2007 film Balls of Fury. The title sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah.
I think it might have been, was it a Will Ferrell movie?
Maybe, I don't know.
And most recently, the exorcism comedy Hellbaby, due out later this year. He's also directed a number of Reno 911 episodes, as well as the web series Three Way with Maeve Quinlan. The site says that the script written by Tolan, which is said to be more akin to Stripes than the self-series syndicated series, is still in play, but whether or not it will stay that way is unknown. Gurant is better known as a writer than a director, having a hand in scripting not only all of the titles mentioned above, but also movies like Night at the Museum, The Pacifier, and Herbie Fully Loaded.
Wow.
The project is actually being produced by Ivan Reitman, and it's unknown when the project will go into production. Okay.
Reno 911 was not a very scripted show.
Big fan of Reno 911.
That's improv, though.
Yeah, this is true. Balls of Fury I've not heard of.
I mean, they came up with bits and stuff beforehand, but yeah. You know, they just...
Right. It wasn't really scripted. It was just right. Kind of outlined.
Yeah.
Hellbaby's like not out yet.
Kind of like a Larry David thing where,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
They knew they wanted to get from point A to point B in the scene and, you know...
Yeah.
The style, not the humor, of course.
I haven't seen that web series that they're talking about, and his writing credits... Ooh. See, this is a former member of the state involved with Reno 911. I wanted him to be better.
Yeah.
I was very happy about that news until I saw those three titles at the end. Maybe they'll stick with the original script.
Well, really, how... A spoof on Baywatch is Reno 911.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they weren't lifeguards, they were cops.
But it's effectively the same deal. It's going to be the same humor.
Right, I can't see a difference, you know? Mm-hmm. Thomas Lennon's playing, Hasselhoff pretty much there.
Or actually, they'd probably bring in Ken Marino for that.
Yeah.
Looks more the part. They're idiots if they don't get Hoff the cameo.
Right, of course.
And Hoff parodying himself is hilarious, as we saw last week. So I'm kind of curious to see it. Now, next story, kind of going the other way from instead of TV to movie, this is movie to TV from Deadline. Battlestar Galactica's Ron Moore to adapt A Knight's Tale as drama project for ABC. A Knight's Tale, the 2001 feature starring Heath Ledger, is headed to the small screen in a series of...
Why doesn't he get more work anyway?
In a series adaptation written by Battlestar Galactica developer executive producer Ron Moore. ABC has bought the project from Sony Pictures with a script commitment. The series is expected to stay close to the premise and style of the movie. It's described as a medieval fantasy incorporating modern music and themes that follow the journey of a young man who starts off impersonating a knight of the realm and ends up becoming one. In addition to writing, Moore is executive producing with his producing partner, Tallship Productions' Merrill Davis, as well as the film's writer-director-producer Brian Helgeland and producer Todd Black. Sony TV is also behind another series adaptation of a hit movie, Beverly Hills Cop, which has a pilot production commitment at CBS with Sean Meyer writing, executive producing, and Eddie Murphy executive producing and potentially recurring.
Oh, boy.
Now, I have some issues with this article. I have some issues with this concept.
Of
course. Now, if I recall correctly, we're both in the minority of actually liking A Knight's Tale.
Yeah. I think we're in the minority. I think there's a lot of people that like Knight's Tale.
I have yet to meet any of them aside from
it
you.
It depends on what you were looking for in Knight's Tale.
I think
Tale.
So, yes. It's kind of a love it or hate it movie.
Yeah.
So I don't think it needs to be made for TV.
It's something that's I can vouch that is shown in in English classes in high schools.
Is it Chaucer?
Yeah, well, of course, because of Chaucer.
Yeah. But still my favorite line, I shall eviscerate you in verse.
Right.
But Moore is best known for doing Dark and Gritty. You didn't see BSG, did you? Battlestar Galactica?
Nah, I never got into that.
Dark, gritty reimagining of the whole thing. Caprica, kind of dark. A Knight's Tale can't be done dark. It doesn't work.
No.
And they say it's going to stick close to the style of the movie, and I wouldn't call the movie a comedy, but it was pretty close.
Yeah.
It's definitely light.
Well, they've got a lot of, the Knight's Tale series, I've got no problem with. I've seen stuff that they've been putting on TV lately.
This is true, this is true.
And holy shit, it cannot be any worse than that.
As long as they get a decent cast, because you really can't, you'll be hard-pressed to top the original cast.
Yeah. Oh, maybe they're going to get Ledger to do the...
Well, you have Ledger, of course, no longer with us, but...
He's been detained.
Mark Addy, Alan Tudyk, Paul Bettany.
Is it too soon for those jokes?
I mean, you had some brilliant actors in those lead roles. And so if they don't get equally brilliant actors in the series, it's going to pale. Also, they said it's a medieval fantasy. There was nothing fantasy about the movie. Music aside, it was pretty straight medieval.
Right.
I mean, some of the dialogue was updated, but there was nothing fantasy that happened in the movie.
Well, a lot of people don't want to see a medieval, period piece.
True, true.
They want to see medieval fantasy.
Yeah.
So they'll use the word fantasy, even if it's not.
And I read somewhere that the success of Once Upon a Time was part of why they're doing this.
Huh.
Because that's based on, the classic fairy tales and Snow White and all that.
Right.
Although I saw one episode of that and decided not to watch anymore.
But, I mean, they could draw from War of Chaucer, into the series, really.
If they were doing a dramatic Canterbury Tales, that I'd be into.
The Canterbury Tales were not dramas, well, even the original
material. This is true.
Material.
They were probably comedic, that's true. It's been ages.
I mean, people farting in people's faces and stuff.
I'll rephrase. If they adapted the Canterbury Tales in general to TV, granted it would have to be Showtime, HBO, they couldn't do it on network. At least not the anything but the versions we read in high school. That they could do on network.
Yeah.
That I'd be into. But A Knight's Tale specifically, if it's a reference to the movie, I think that story ended nicely.
Yeah.
He beat the Black Knight or whoever he was, Rufus Sewell's character. It was a nice happy ending, and it's this, great blip in cinematic history that you get or you don't, and it should be left that way. Anyway, on to this week's movie, which is from 2012, Battleship. This is continuing our Trailer Clash trilogy, movies whose trailers we reviewed in our Trailer Clash episode last April, Fool's Day. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by...
The Cutting Room Floor. When you have a movie that's running 2 hours and 11 minutes, time to use the cutting room floor.
And by Michael Bay. If you want a mindless action movie with loads of pretty CGI explosions, but with almost no plot or character development, just go watch a Michael Bay movie and skip this nonsense.
All right, so this is quite easy, actually. Well, the movie begins...
Well, if I may,
what?
Do a variation. I've been working up a variation of his plot summary.
Really?
It's a movie ostensibly about a bunch of macho men in
Yeah.
the Navy who may occasionally go to the YMCA. Sorry, couldn't resist that one. Continue.
Well, let's see.
And I ran
We've
out
had
of Village People titles.
the first 9 minutes of this movie was cutesy exposition. We have this these brothers who are at a bar. One's kind of down on his luck a bit, but he sees this girl, and then he all she wants is something to eat, a chicken burrito, but she just can't get it. And so he goes on a
All she
quest
wanted
for
was a
it,
chicken burrito.
just one chicken burrito, and
They
she
wouldn't give
wouldn't
it
get
to
he
her.
wouldn't give it to her. Wow, that takes me back. he goes on this quest for the chicken burrito, winds up getting tased for it, but gets her the chicken burrito. And he's of course convinced to join the Navy, even though he's got a record. I don't know how that works,
Yeah.
but anyway, it's a movie. Maybe he had the charges dropped somehow. I don't know. Even though he
And
trashed
it's
half the
suggested that he
story.
has more of a record than what we saw.
Well, yeah, that's true too. Yeah. So last time I checked, you can't get into the
Yeah.
Navy if you got a record like that.
And
But anyway.
well, and he starts off more or less. There's a bit of a time jump that thankfully saves us from a montage. But when we come back, it isn't that much later, and he's a lieutenant.
Well, yes. Obviously, there's been a time jump. And at first, I thought them playing Stone Temple Pilots in the bar was like, oh my God, what year is it? And of course, it turns out it was literally some years ago.
Oh, okay. That jump is years.
That's what I would think, to
Okay,
become a
because he was
lieutenant in the
suddenly
Navy.
a lieutenant. Now, from what I understand, if you're a college graduate when you go in, you're an officer. But he
Yeah.
doesn't strike me as the college graduate type.
Exactly. There had to have been years between that bar scene and them, having the summit there. So, yeah, because and his brother wasn't a captain at the time either.
Oh,
His
okay.
I don't think his brother was just enlisted.
Okay, I missed all of that. Continue.
That's kind of what I'm gathering from it, at least. I mean, they don't go into too much detail, which is kind of thankful because
I thought maybe he was right out
holy
of basic training.
shit, they already had gone on long enough as it is for all
Ah.
this, because we have a soccer game. There's some trouble there, and they get violent, of course, with each other, and he almost gets kicked out. And they're having these exercises, and lo and behold, we finally have aliens show up after, and I looked down at the time when this actually happened, half an hour. Half an hour. Half an hour. Of just them fucking
Exposition.
around. Yes, exposition. Useless, pointless
Well,
exposition.
what in the hands of a better director would be world building, but in this case is just pointless exposition.
Right. So then we finally get to the battle. The aliens, of course, complete for the first battle, the aliens are completely overpowering. We have nothing that can possibly damage them. They just completely dominate. They take out a number of our ships, a number of the Japanese ships that are there, and we're pretty much screwed. Then something happens. We finally get to the part where they actually get to the game battleship, which they have some tsunami buoys that are in a grid, and they're sort of doing the silent running thing, just kind of floating there, and they have to figure out where the ships are hidden. And for some reason, the aliens couldn't see where they were hidden either,
Yeah, they didn't really explain that.
despite their superior technology. Yeah, the aliens complete. Not only did they just let this ship go when they were destroying the entire fleet, they said, "Ah, who cares about that one?" Which, I mean, none of it makes any sense. For some reason, they cannot see this ship. They're all, hidden from each other, And despite us not being able to communicate or use radios, we can still get the feed from the tsunami buoys. Anyway, that's all mildly irritating compared to a lot of the other stuff with elements of the plot.
Yeah.
But we'll
that was
get to that later.
One of the better parts of the movie to me.
That should have been. I'll get into that a little bit. Let me finish the plot summary,
okay.
Though. We have a lot of explosions. We have terrible CGI. We have to take out our own satellite dishes. We can't just shut them off. And hilarity ensues.
Mm-hmm. Now, just going back to the very beginning, for just starters.
Yeah.
The very beginning, you have this dark, dramatic music. The Hasbro logo pops up. Very funny to me.
Yes.
I don't know why.
Yes, it is. I was thinking that too, yeah.
And I gotta say, the cutesy exposition at the beginning, I think, was also one of the better parts of the movie. I actually liked that. I thought that was entertaining.
Some of it worked.
Surprisingly
asking,
comedic. I didn't expect them to get that comedic. So.
The asking for her hand in marriage bit
well,
was pretty good.
No, up until the earlier part, before the time jump, I mean.
Oh,
the actual burrito quest was kind of funny.
The Pink Panther theme and everything, yeah.
That was entertaining. And then we go 10 years into the future.
I don't know how many years that would be, but I imagine to get
X number of years
to Lieutenant,
that
would take a while.
One more comment on the burrito quest, though.
Sure.
They don't have any Taco Bells in this universe. They're intentionally open after the bars close.
I guess it would depend on which Hawaiian island they were on.
Possibly. Okay, so yeah, X number of years, you know, flash forward, we're spared from a montage.
Yeah.
And
who needs a montage when you have 2 hours and 11 minutes to run?
He says, and then you have this, you know, that they're at the was it the soccer game? No, it was after the soccer game.
Goddamn, soccer is just as boring in movies as it is in real life.
Yeah, yeah. And they're boarding the ships, and there's this little kid there, and he asks him the difference between a battleship and a destroyer. A destroyer is a kind of battleship, by the way. I researched this. Battleship is just a generic term for all of them.
Yeah.
But he says to the kid, "I fly the ship."
I caught that too.
Okay, so you heard that too.
Like, what kind of movie did he think he was making?
No, if he said, "I drive the ship," that's fine. Drive to, you know, for a boat, I can buy. Fly?
He flies it.
Yeah.
His boat flies.
And then we're introduced to one of the two bad casting choices. Because I really didn't have a problem with most of the cast. It's mediocre, but they're acceptable.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to it. Let's see. Who's your problem?
Two big problems. Starting with just taking them in chronological order. Rihanna.
Oh, God, she was terrible.
I cringed every time she delivered the line.
She made Brooklyn Decker look like a great actress.
Oh, Brooklyn Decker was fine. I have no problem with her.
You put her next to... I mean, I didn't think... I mean, the only thing I was glad Rihanna was in there for was the scene where she was fighting the alien hit her. I so regret not seeing this in a movie theater, so I couldn't exclaim, "Hey, who's in that suit? Chris Brown?" Huh?
Incidentally.
Huh?
No. In an interview with GQ, Berg explained how he came up with the idea to cast her. He realized that she could act after seeing her 2009 interview about the Chris Brown assault on Good Morning America with Diane Sawyer, during which he found her intelligent and articulate, as well as her appearance on Saturday Night Live. So he decided she could act by seeing her in an interview.
That's where I got the idea for Boom Goes the Dolomite for a title.
Yeah,
when
yeah.
She said the line, boom.
Yeah. So that's my first issue. Not only you know, bad acting, but also desperately fighting to cover her accent, which slipped out here and there. I don't know why she just didn't, you know, use it.
Yeah.
And should I just jump to my other... Yeah, I'll just jump to my other casting issue. It's later in the movie. U.S. Army Colonel Gregory Gadson was brought in to play Lieutenant Nick Canales. He's a colonel who, Army colonel who has no legs. He has prosthetics. Brooklyn Decker's character is a physical therapist. She's working with him. Not an actor. Incidentally, he is the first bilateral amputee to serve as a garrison commander to any post in the U.S. Army, which is great, but...
No shit, he wasn't an actor?
No. Which is my problem, because he can't act.
I mean, yeah, he was a terrible actor, but...
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, now they know he wasn't an actor, I'll cut up some slack at least, you know?
Well, yeah, fair. I mean, I'm not criticizing his acting per se, because he's not an actor. This isn't what he does. But why put him in the movie? I'm sure there are plenty of amputees out there who are actors, good actors, who could play that role. So, also, by the way, when you first saw him, did you think, "Bring me my legs"?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Wasn't
I was hoping for that line in this too.
Yeah.
I think seeing Piranha 3 Double D last week really spoiled us for this week.
Actually, pretty much every time he was on screen, I was thinking, "Bring me my legs." I was practically waiting for him to say it, even though I knew he
was. I kept thinking he was CGI'd.
No, he's actually an amputee.
He's actually an amputee. Actually, I think there is a far more annoying actor in this. Actually, not more annoying than Rihanna. I think she was the worst. I'm in agreement there. Okay. One of the crew members, the redhead guy. I can't.
The one who brought up the picture of the lizard.
Yes.
Is constantly in harm's way.
Yeah.
The character was kind of annoying, but I didn't have a problem with the performance because he was supposed to be annoying.
You think he was supposed to be annoying?
I kind of got that. He was the guy who was always stumbling into harm's way and had to be saved every 5 seconds.
Yeah. What is it? I mean, it was just a really retarded character that I can't see, you know, not being thrown overboard after being out to sea with that guy.
Now there were two characters I actually liked, particularly liked.
Yeah.
The sarcastic scientist is the one who basically says, if they're coming here, we're going to get our asses kicked.
Who the hell was that anyway? Played that. Like it's not an obvious, listing in there.
But I mean, it's basically the Jeff Goldblum character in.
Yes.
But I like this guy a lot more in that role than I did Jeff Goldblum. And the Japanese commander.
Oh yeah, and the whole thing about Jerry Lewis and stuff.
I liked him pretty much throughout the movie. I wish there was more of him.
Explaining how he, you know, had all those bruises, how it was an accident.
And yeah.
Jerry Lewis. Jerry Lewis.
How he learned to shoot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When he was 12. But that also leads to the other part of the movie that I actually enjoyed, because there really only were two. The game reference. When they referenced the actual board game. I thought that was clever.
That should have been the best part of this movie. That should have been awesome.
I think it was the best part of the movie. I mean, it could have been a lot better, but I think it was the best part of the movie.
It just pissed me off, though, honestly. Just two parts of that. One, how many shots did it take them to figure out, the crazy tactic of maybe leading your shot?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not some crazy military strategy that when you're shooting at something that's moving,
aim where it's going to be.
Right, aim where it's going to be, not where it is.
Yeah.
They missed twice before they said, you know, let's aim for there, for where it's going. And then when the creatures or the aliens figured out what we were doing after taking out two of their guys, which suddenly now our weapons can, in fact, destroy them, which they couldn't before. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden, yep, we've got some stuff that could work. But then they figure they start serpentining to dodge our fire. Mm-hmm. To which they said, "Oh wow, highly intelligent creatures." Because they figured out the art of serpentining.
Yeah.
Something you learn when you're how old and somebody's like shooting paintballs at you or something. Become a hard target. Yes. Highly developed life form.
And thing is, I wouldn't have minded a lot of this if there was any emotional investment. But I didn't give a shit about anybody.
Yeah, and...
I mean, they spend a half hour getting you to care about these characters. And I had no investment at all. I was actually bored with all of the large explosion sections, because I just didn't care.
Well, you can only take so many large explosions before you're just like, yep, that's another one. You know, I mean, yeah. they wasted that first half hour with exposition when it should have been spent on the crew, you know? That should have been spent with them already enlisted in the Navy. Mm-hmm. And I know it would mean not having Brooklyn Decker in the movie. But not having a love story.
Yeah, that was tacked on.
Yeah.
And just because we haven't mentioned him yet, we should bring up Liam Neeson. Will the man do anything for money?
I wonder. You know what? That's it. We should start like a Kickstarter to get Liam Neeson on Zombie Takeout with us for an episode.
That, or I want to put a challenge out. And I don't know if any of our listeners are young enough for this. We actually have an explicit tag, so maybe not. But you know, if you're listening and you have kids in the right age range, I want to see a high school production scrape together enough money to get Liam Neeson in their play.
Ah, but you're supposed to cast students in most of those.
I think they could make an exception for Liam Neeson, and I just want to see if he'll do it. Just get him to say yes. Just see what it takes to get him to say yes to a high school production.
I'm telling you, you gotta start.
I think he'll do it.
A Kickstarter.
Yeah.
To get Neeson on here. We'll do Phantom Menace for that episode too. That'll be like a great one. Or Darkman, I don't know.
Man would be better, because I'm sure we'd probably agree on that one. You know, we have that ongoing disagreement about Phantom Menace.
Well, that's why I think Phantom Menace would be interesting.
Oh, okay. See who he agrees with.
Well, because we could also see, like, you know, why was the performance so mute?
Yeah. And you know, I'm bagging on the movie, but I have to say there was one thing that I thought was a very nice touch that you don't often see in these kinds of movies.
What's that?
The aliens were different sizes.
Yeah.
They weren't just cookie cutter. There was actually some variation among them.
They were ridiculously CGI'd.
Oh, yes.
In a lot of the scenes. In most of them.
But some were bigger, some were smaller, thinner. You know, the faces were different. They weren't just, you know, carbon copies of each other, which I thought was very nice, because you tend to get that in these movies.
But the huge problem was still the inconsistency in the power of the aliens. Okay. You know, you need to set up some guidelines as to what can penetrate the armor and what cannot. And for some reason, when we were first fighting them, none of our weapons could penetrate their armor. By the end of the movie, we had weapons from almost 70 years ago penetrating their armor.
And was it just me, or was it horribly cheesy when the crew of the Missouri, the elderly crew of the Missouri, shows up randomly?
Well, they would be there, probably. If you go to Pearl Harbor, there are always vets there. They may have even been running the museum, who knows.
That's a possibility. That makes sense then, because they're actually on the ship in various places, and it just seemed a little cheesy to me.
There are always a ton of vets out there.
Oh, and just side note, what is it with AC/DC in all of these movies whenever they want to get across the whole America fuck yeah thing? An Australian band to get across America fuck yeah.
That's a great point. I think a lot of people forget that AC/DC is Australian and not American.
Mm-hmm. It struck me this time. I mean, we've seen it a million times before, but it just happened to strike me this time.
Well, I think the weirdest part of this movie was them playing Fortunate Son at the very
Oh
end.
yeah. Listen to the lyrics next time you hear that. I'm not you, Scott. I'm in general to the audience. Because you see that a lot of times in these pro-America things.
But think about it.
I think presidential candidates have used the song, but the song is decidedly anti-military, anti-rich, anti-war.
Well, I mean, let's think about this here. The end of the movie, he was asking for the admiral's daughter's hand in marriage, and they were going to go off and
Hash it
have a
out.
lunch discussion about it, over lunch and everything. The song that they're playing is actually about Dwight Eisenhower's grandson, who married Richard Nixon's daughter at the height of the Vietnam
I
War,
didn't know that. Okay.
and John Fogerty just sitting back thinking, this fucker's never gonna see any action. He's just gonna, he's a fortunate son, two presidents in his family.
Right. But yeah, very inappropriate. I mean, at least the AC/DC has the right vibe and the right
Well,
kind of,
yeah.
it feels right for the scenes, even though it's odd that they're Australian. An Australian band is used in that capacity a lot.
But they're getting ready to kick ass, so
Yeah, it
was it
fits.
Thunderstruck again? I
Thunderstruck,
think.
there were about three or four AC/DC songs in
Oh, were
the
there?
soundtrack,
Okay.
but the Fortunate Son was an
That
odd
was
choice,
weird.
and
That
I've
was.
heard that used in a patriotic capacity before, and it
And
always
I have
strikes me.
too, but you're talking
Have you
about a
never
scene.
paid attention to the lyrics?
You're talking about a scene where the dude is about to
Become a
marry
fortunate
into a
son.
family of power.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really weird that they would choose that song for
Maybe
that
it was
scene.
meta. Maybe Berg was actually doing something smart.
I seriously
Yeah,
doubt that.
I'm just putting it out there. It's just
Because
maybe.
this movie was all about the flag waving jingoism.
Yeah.
I mean, they beat you over the head with it. It was
Not quite.
crazy.
I don't know if it was quite as bad as ID4, but it was close.
It was damn close. Yeah, well,
Or at least not. It
nobody
wasn't as offensively so as ID4. I'll put it that
can
way.
go as far as ID4
Right.
did. Nobody could actually have the line where, from this, day on, everyone will celebrate July 4th as Independence
Yeah.
Day. I mean, that line alone is, I can't help but shake my head when I hear that line. Or even when I'm just sitting here saying that line. I'm just, oh my God.
Yeah, this one didn't go quite that far, but it was pretty close.
Oh yeah. But the reason why I thought this was a Michael Bay movie was because you pretty much mashed up Transformers in Pearl Harbor. How was that alien not a Transformer? In fact, I really thought I saw the logo of the Autobots,
Decepticons.
Autobots. No, I didn't think it was the good guys, the
Oh, the okay,
Autobots.
the Optimus Prime head, yeah.
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me. I think Hasbro owns them too,
Oh, all
so it
right.
wouldn't surprise me if they snuck it in.
I mean, I could have sworn I saw the logo in the head of one of the alien ships. Yeesh.
So, did you hang around for the bit after the credits?
Yes. I was hoping you had a better idea as to what the fuck that was about.
They were setting up a sequel.
Yeah.
Thankfully, the movie didn't make nearly enough for that sequel to happen.
Who knows how much it costs to get a sequel these days? Well, I mean, as we looked up before, this costs a little over 200 million to make, and then it grossed about a little over 300 million. So yeah, 209 was the estimated budget, 302 was the worldwide.
Okay.
That's actually not quite breaking even, since that's gross, So you got to think about,
So they lost money, so there's no sequel, thankfully.
they had to have lost money on this.
Just to explain the end scene to those who haven't seen it, you see these kids in Scotland walking home from school in school uniforms, and they happen upon what looks like a giant cement sphere that hit the ground. They tried to break into it. Suddenly, this guy he shows up with a tow truck who looks a lot like Nick Frost. He tries to break into it. He finally does, and out comes an alien, and he grabs him by the neck. Actually, I don't think he grabs him. I think we just see the hands coming out, and we get a shot of the face mask.
Yeah, it kind of went black, and I didn't see.
And setting up for, they're on Earth now. Oh, one thing I wanted to nitpick. Actually, this isn't really a nitpick. This is more of
Okay.
a, well, a rat pick, because something much bigger than a nit. The whole phlebotinum is that the alien communication ship crashed, and they need to get to the satellite array on one of the islands to send a signal home.
Right.
When they get the signal going, you actually see beams shooting from the dishes up to the
Oh
satellite.
yeah, that is a good point to bring up that I was thinking too. Even the stuff in the beginning where they were sending the message out in the introduction, yeah, you see a beam.
You did see a beam there too? Okay.
Yes,
So
you
you can't
do.
even excuse it as the aliens hooked up their tech to send a beam up.
No, according to this film, that if you go out to in the desert where we're sending signals, the SETI, program. You'll see beams going out into space from those.
Wow. Yeah.
That's why I thought of the title of You Sank My IQ Level,
Yeah,
because
yeah, yeah.
this movie, just wow. Just jaw-dropping stupidity in this movie.
Oh, also, there's a scene with Bring Me My Legs guy.
Yeah.
The what's his name? Colonel Gregory Gadsden. Mick Canales is the character's name. He confronts the aliens because it is really the Bring Me My Legs scene.
Yeah.
Alien looks at him, and they have these things in their they basically have a HUD that allows them to analyze what they're looking at. The alien is confused because it's looking at someone who is, half organic, half mechanical. All of their advanced technology, and they can't deal with a cyborg. Or not even a cyborg, a guy with prosthetic legs. They can't process this. And it of course just gives him that moment of hesitation he needs to beat down the alien with his bare hands, with the alien in an armored EV suit.
Really, just a complete ripoff of, the Master Chief from Halo.
Effectively, yeah. Very
Yeah.
much so, now that you mentioned it. I didn't
Yeah,
think of that.
ridiculously copied.
Yeah.
Which I don't think Hasbro owns the rights to that.
And when they took the helmet off, he looked kind of like Ki-Adi Mundi.
I was thinking of like the bass player from Korn or something like that, actually.
The Jedi with the two brains, the big bump on the top of his head and the goatee,
Oh,
looked a
yeah, I
lot like
guess
him.
so. I guess so.
But they have snake eyes and quill beards. Weirdly.
Yeah.
It makes no sense, but then again, most of this maybe makes no sense, so I'm not going to nitpick the alien design. That would be, unnecessary in a movie like this. So I think we've pretty much covered sequels and remakes.
Yeah. The answer is, if we could add a time machine, we'd go back and stop them from making this one in the
Yeah.
first place.
Yeah, get them to make your idea. Because that would be a good movie.
Well, the problem with this is, of course, it took an hour and 15 minutes to get to the Gumdrop Forest,
Yeah, basically.
which, I
The
mean,
actual
that's
reference
insane.
to the game, which I still maintain was the only decent part of the movie. I
Oh
mean,
yeah.
I had some chuckles at the beginning, and then I liked that, and that was it.
I mean, there's a number of things they could have done to have made this better. They could have had the aliens as just us, humans who have, higher
Yeah,
technology,
yeah.
but not that high. They kind of get, marooned out in the ocean, after crashing,
Anything can break.
instead of the annoying transformer bullshit that
Right.
they had to come up with there. And of course,
Don't cast Rihanna or Gregory Gadsden.
yeah, and I've got no problem with long movies. Gandhi ran 191 minutes.
Long movies are fine if they're good.
This is a movie that has the same stature as Piranha 3 Double D.
Not
It's
as much
pretty
fun.
well, right. But it's pretty much going for the same thing, right? It's going for the popcorn. It's going for the entertainment value.
But Piranha knew what it was. Both Piranha movies knew what they were.
Exactly. This just, ooh, let's try to be something for everyone. Let's try to be military movie with a good, date night love story.
Yeah. And sci-fi, which made no sense, and
Sci-fi that just, yeah, absurd sci-fi.
a pop singer in the middle of
Yeah.
it. And
A pop singer, a swimsuit model.
yeah, that's what Brooklyn
then,
Decker is? Okay, I didn't know.
yeah, and then Liam Neeson and John Carter.
Seriously, if you have a high school production, you have any access to scrape together the money, approach him, see if he'll do it. I bet he will.
I'm telling you, we got to get him on this show. Fuck the high school production. Let's get Neeson on with us.
Well, that works well for us, but if we can get, I just want to see if he'll cross that line, if he will sink that low to do a high school production. That was sequels and remakes, I guess. So,
Yes.
on to Brains.
On to Brains.
Now, most of it bored me. I can't say it was bad. At least not in. I never was tempted to tap out. I was just kind of bored with most of it. It was horribly mediocre. There were a few things I liked. There were a few things I really didn't like. So I'm going 2.5 straight down the middle.
Wow, I am right there with you, actually. And for the same reason, it wasn't like so bad that I was just like, I just can't take this. I gotta go.
Yeah.
But there were just some parts that just pissed me off, like I'd said. And there's some cliches, that I even heard in my notes. My name is Indigo Montoya. You have killed my brother.
Prefer to
Prepare to
die, yeah.
die.
Yeah.
After that's the only thing. Never mind being. Oh my God! I can't believe they killed the his brother off. It was just kind
Yeah.
of.
Well, that's the point I was making about the lack of emotional connection, because that's supposed to be sad, and you're kind of supposed to be on his side, or at least get why he's completely losing his shit at that point. I just didn't
But
care.
man, what I wouldn't give to have been in the theater to have s yelled out the Chris Brown line. Anyway. Oh, and did I miss, did they actually do a Star Wars Death Star coming in range thing with the satellite dishes?
Kinda, yeah.
Like on they had like the radar screen. It was very similar.
And they had to wait a certain amount of time for it to be in range, yeah.
Are they really doing this? And of course, using the old technology against the alien technology. Complete Battlefield Earth.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah,
2.5.
yes, two and a half as well.
All right, so what have we learned?
We learned you gotta cut at least 45 minutes from this film.
Yeah. Popcorn movies really shouldn't go past an hour and a half.
Hour and a half, yes. Popcorn movie. That's all this was.
And I learned that, I learned two things. Board games should not be made into movies. And Rihanna should never be allowed to act again. And I say act in quotes. And when you're making a movie, hire writers and actors, for fuck's sake. All right, so until next week, when we will be continuing or concluding the trilogy with The Moth Diaries. I've seen it. It's actually worse.
Oh no.
I think a little worse.
Oh no.
Until then, go to Zombie Takeout, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus, the movie list, which has every movie we've done so far and all of the movies we're considering doing in the future. The request form, of course, if you have a movie you'd like us to review, leave it on the request form, and the recommendations list. Everything we've given four brains or better collectively. If you're looking for something to rent, and you tend to agree with our opinions. You can also leave us an email, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or drop us a voicemail at 414-368-CTO1, or for the alphanumerically challenged,
You fuck yourself.
414-368-9861. Until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There
are.
you are.
I tell you what, boys, this is a head stomper.
recommendations list. If you have a movie you'd like to see, like to hear us review, leave it on the recommendations form. And of course, I'll take that again.
This wasn't a Michael Bay movie?
No, this is Peter Berg.
Oh, wow. I just assumed it was Bay.
Nope.
I mean, I saw Berg directed it, but I just assumed Bay produced.
I don't think so.
Huh. Damn.